with a broken face and was a Pro Bowl starter. That had me hooked right there. And by the way, a great week for Canva this week, because we all saw that on full display Saturday night to put up the extra 1 second.
But wait, I missed what you said at the beginning. A great, what did you say at the start?
A great week for Canva.
For Canva.
Wait, what am
are you understanding?
No.
Great.
No.
Kelly doesn't understand either.
The reference either, Craig.
Canva.
Because Canva always helps out with like all the editing and everything like that to be able to make it look like, oh, it was 1 second.
Oh, Canva.
Okay.
All right. You know, that Anquan Boldin thing, he did have a broken face. His entire jaw, face looked different from that point on thereafter in his life. He did not look like himself anymore because of the subsequent surgeries. All right, Greg, baseball, final 3 weeks, baby. This is it. So many wild card. We'll take a look at the standings here coming up on the show. But so many spots, it's actually not as many as it used to be. It's kind of clearing up in terms of the third wild card. Not cleared up completely, but at least the teams that are contending are being reduced here with 3 weeks left. You have one total and four sides. Let's start with the total today between the Braves and the Phillies.
Yep, early game here, and I like the over between Braves and Phillies. This is going to be Grant Holmes going for the Braves, and man, he's been doing for regression for a very long time. A solid 3.62 ERA, but less than 7.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, over 3.5 walks per 9. And Aceless Lizardo has just really strange home and road splits. Away from home, a sub 1.80 ERA, really doesn't give up the deep ball, more like 1.2 home runs per 9 innings, and a 4.52 ERA at home. Braves are starting to find their swagger a little bit more on offense, too. Nice comeback yesterday. You got a Phillies team that averaged nearly 5 runs per game at home. I think that this is a really good spot for some runs. And for the Braves, they've been a little bit banged up with that bullpen as well. So I do like the total of 8 here. If I absolutely had to play the side, I'd be looking at the Phillies on the run line. But that's a pretty chalky side there with the Phillies with regards to money line. So I stuck with the run line.
All right, Mets at Marlins. Mets dunzo. Marlins, boy, they still have a math. We start to invoke the word mathematical here with 3 weeks left. Mathematically, still in it, but man, they're drifting. It's not looking good. How are you playing the Mets at the Marlins today?
Yeah, that stretch where they were like the most winless team coming out of the All-Star break in July absolutely destroyed them, but I think they're going to be destroying Jonah Tong in this one. He made 5 starts last year and had a 7.71 ERA. He's looked okay in his 3 relief appearances coming out of the bullpen, but man, not really a guy that I have a lot of faith in. Even at the minor league level, he was giving up 5 walks per 9 innings. And Eury Pérez, throughout his career, more than 1.5 better on his ERA at home rather than away from him. That's been very much a case this season. At home, a 2.82 ERA. It's a Marlins team that has been a little bit cheeky with the bullpen, but keep in mind, the Mets, they traded away pretty much their entire bullpen at the deadline, so I think this is a great spot for the Met, for the Marlins being about -115. So took the fish here on the money line.
Marlins now 4 back of the Diamondbacks, who inhabit the number 3 wild card position. Diamondbacks have a half game lead over the Padres for that final National League playoff spot. Marlins not only the only team down 4 games in that wild card race. Cardinals also down 4. Pirates down 5. Let's go to the American League. Are the Orioles next? Because We just went through the September standings and who was at the top. The Orioles are 0-6 in September. They have fallen 4 back in the American League wild card race. And it's not good because the Rangers are in between them and the Guardians. The Blue Jays are in between them and the Guardians. Well, the Orioles have a chance to get back in it. They have a 3-game set against the Guardians that begins tonight at Orioles Park at Camden Yards. How are you playing this?
Yeah, and it doesn't help when you have to go up against the Red Sox like they did in the previous series, but I think this is a nice get back spot for them because Trevor Rogers, he has been in the neighborhood of going 10-6 in the team in the last 16 starts for the team. Additionally, since the beginning of the month of June, a 3.01 ERA. The ERA does not point out how well he's pitched, and Joey Cantillo on the flip side, massive walks issues here for the Guardians. He's been giving up 4.6 walks per 9 innings. Guardians have looked better with their offense here recently. Training for the likes of Joe Adell and company helps them out. But I think that this is a good right spot for the Orioles. You mentioned the fact that they went 0-4 in September. They've been close in a lot of these games. I think they bust through here. I took them on the money line.
Guardians one game lead in the wild card race for that final wild card spot in the American League, but also Guardians 2.5 out of the White Sox, behind the White Sox, in the AL Central race. As the Guardians piddle along at 73-71, they're going to break our hearts again with our under 79.5. What else you got today, Greg?
I also do like the Giants here on the money line. I set them at a -130, or I took them at a -130 with Logan Webb, who's always so much better at home rather than away from home. Michael McGreevy comes in really bad form, 3+ runs allowed, and now 6 out of his last 8 starts. Giants are a little bit banged up, so I don't know if I would want the over, but getting them at -130, took them on the money line, and then that last game was Brewers versus Cubs. Give me the Brewers to gasser it up with Robert Gasser. He's been so much better in terms of not giving up the deep ball at home rather than away from home. And Matthew Boyd has actually been really good away from home, a sub-3 ERA, but that Brewers bullpen since July 1st, #1 in the National League. So I took the Brewers here right around -120, -125 on the money line.
Yeah, Brewers right now, well, 88-56, let's call it 1.5 game lead over the Dodgers for the best record in all of baseball, 3 weeks left in the season. Fab Five from Greg Peterson. Greg, thank you as always. Appreciate it.
Always fun. Thank you.
Greg Peterson, everybody. Follow all his stuff at vsin.com. We'll get dating updates from him in subsequent weeks. Wes Reynolds joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He joins us now from his lair somewhere here in the desert. You can follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1. That's the #1. And of course, Wes, big Indiana fan. And Indiana starts with a glorious victory, as I'm sure you expected them to do so. How you doing, Wes?
I'm well, guys. For my water choice, I have to go with what now, because I'm drinking more water with this new diet. I have the wide mouth bottle thing, so I have to go with the Body Armor, because I don't like the little small bottles, because I like to like chug it, because I'm not a big water drinker. So it's like a new habit now.
Yeah,
I'm drinking, you know, I drink a lot of caffeine, but I'm trying to drink more water. So it's like I need to have something that's chuggable. Mm-hmm. I don't enjoy like little cups of water. I'm just like, hey, get it done, man. I got to have my 2 liters a day and, you know, chug it. So it's two Body liters. Armor.
Wow.
I'm going to recommend those Prime hydration drinks are great, Wes, but I know what you mean. Those got the bigger mouth too.
No, that was the most interesting comment about the waters last week. Is someone said one of the reasons I like Evian, but probably don't, I'm adding to what he's saying, but probably don't notice it, is the size of the actual hole at the top of the bottle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Anyway, Wes, let's start with the obvious. Your take on the Western Michigan ending. What would you add to that conversation?
Yeah, I just it's more of an emotion. Like, I just feel so sorry for Western Michigan and those kids, because it's like, you know, yeah, you compete for a conference championship in the MAC and whatnot, and you try to get to a bowl game and get a win, but that is what that team would be remembered by. And they'd be doing reunions 20 and 30 and 40 years from now. Like, we won at Michigan, at the Big House. You would be remembered forever. And I felt like it was just taken away from them. And that just, to me, there was no way there could be any time on that clock for that to happen. You know, Underwood, give him credit, he heaved it down there, but you know, I felt that they got screwed. I mean, I don't know any other way to phrase it. I felt that Western Michigan really got the short end of the stick there and got some home cooking.
Of all the, I won't even say blue bloods, but of all the, you know, top favorites in college football, top 10 teams, let's say, all hugely favored, which is the one besides Michigan, which is the team that you felt the most concern for, even in victory? Would it be Oregon against Boise State?
Not really, because I think Boise's a good team, actually. So, you know, they're and I kind of like them a little bit against Memphis this week. And what's a great matchup between who could potentially get that G6 playoff spot week 3 out there in Boise. I think Boise's an actual good team. I'd say who gave me maybe the most concern. That's actually a very hard question. Maybe Ole Miss from last night. And not that Louisville's not a good team. That was the only ranked versus ranked team that our game that we saw all weekend. But Ole Miss in the secondary, man, because you had that quarterback, Lincoln Keenholz,
Yeah.
Yeah. Lincoln Kienholz was really struggling in the first half. Of course, he's the Ohio State transfer. It's like he couldn't even complete a pass in the flat. And then all of a sudden, he's just throwing bombs down the field against these guys. That Ole Miss secondary, a little leaky when you go ahead and you're going to play, Gunnar Stockton and Arch Manning and Sam Leavitt and all the good quarterbacks there in the SEC. And that's got to be rectified, I think, in a hurry for Pete Golding.
Jason Garrett was in mid-season form in the Notre Dame game. I think it was the first quarter. Wisconsin had a fourth and short. Will Hill was pointing this out. And Jason Garrett, first thing he goes, this is the first big decision for Wisconsin. Yeah, I'd kick here just like they're doing right here. It's like in one sentence, right? In one breath, going, covering all his bases. I'm like, oh, God, we're back.
And Somebody had an observation about Jason Garrett. Like, every time he does a game, it seems like it's like a, I don't know, like an HR training session, doesn't it? Like just the way that he talks.
Oh, you mean like as him, like, as the presenter? Yes.
Yes.
That is a great call, actually. He's like the guy day one who's like taking you through everything to get ready for work. Yeah, for sure.
Can we show Wes these conference props to make the college football playoff, if you could, guys? I briefly touched on these earlier, and my lean was on the chalk in each one of these conferences. And I'm curious, this is how many teams will make the college football playoff. Obviously, you got to account for Notre Dame as one of the teams. You got to account for the fifth best conference winner as another one of these teams. But here you go, ACC, Big 12, Big 10, SEC, all of these lined. I'm probably leaning to the favored side on each of this. ACC under 1.5, Big 12, under 1.5, Big 10, under 3.5, SEC over 3.5. If I am wrong about any of those, which is it?
It might be Big Ten getting
That's
4.
The one I would think.
It might be the over there, because I think, look, the top three, Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana, whatever order you want to put them in. And we've been talking about it all summer. Who is going to be that fourth team? Is it going, Michigan doesn't look like they're like a great candidate, at least right now, even though
I did take them.
That went to 6.5. I was like, okay, this has gone a little bit too far. Everybody's down on Michigan. So I took them at home against Oklahoma this week. But Penn State looked very impressive. I know week one against Marshall. And I think USC, like the first week against San Jose State, they did not show much on offense. So San Jose State covered again in the second half. So everybody's like, oh man, USC, they're laying too much to Fresno State. And then they play Friday night and shut them out. And, it's a new defense that Gary Patterson is coordinating there. And we know Maiava is a Heisman candidate. They're still going to be really good offensively. So I think USC, at least from week one, and it's going to change week to week, USC is probably that team that could be the fourth team out of the Big Ten.
SMU, FSU tonight. Any play from you, Wes?
Oh, man. They're just daring me to lay SMU. And I don't like being dared in a standalone game, because everybody is down on Florida State, as Kelly well knows, a proud Seminole. What's Mike Norvell's buyout? I don't know if Kelly has looked up at MikeNorvellBuyout.com and knows that answer. But, it's just like, oh, because they didn't look very good against New Mexico State in week one. Like, they never even came close to covering that big number. And it's like, there's no shame in that. That doesn't mean you're bad. Like, week one, you're probably going to be a little bit sluggish, a little bit sloppy. Even my Hoosiers were against North Texas, mainly in the first half. But I'm going to pass for now. But they're going to try to dare me to take this ugly dog on a Monday night standalone game.
If this hits 3.5 anywhere, this immediately gets smacked back to 3, right, Wes?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I think it's just going to dance around that key number here. So, but people are down on Florida State. They just don't look like the Seminoles of old,
Mm-hmm. Well, I know.
Wes will join us for another segment. He's kind enough to do so. We'll talk about week two in college football, see if he has anything that he's looked at there. And week one in the National Football League. Let's go. Is this happening?
Two days.
Still to come. Not only some more Wes Reynolds, but also Justin Emery a little later on.
Pumped, man.
Talking about MLB strikeout leader prop of the day, which he has just been killing.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait to have him in studio, and a deep dive into MLB Manager of the Year, which should be fun. But first, water samples 3 and 4. Ready?
Yes.
Oh, look at drum roll.
Drum roll, please. Thank you, Chris Bananas Foster.
Here we go, number three.
Three. It's got weak legs. It's got weak legs. Mm. Not many notes.
Mm. Interesting. Interesting.
I have no idea.
I'm on to four.
I had no idea. It's real clean and crisp.
Okay, right, three is Evian, four is Fiji. All mine are in.
Great. Oh man, four really threw me off.
I'm going three Evian, four Fiji. All right.
Continue with Wes. I have no idea.
How are these being revealed? Well, we'll find out.
The crew's got it.
But when are they going to tell us later? They're going to tell us now. Okay, Wes Reynolds joins us once again. We're workshopping this segment. We really didn't think.
I thought four was going to be make things more clear for me. It didn't. It just confused me more.
Yeah, I'm pretty. Listen, all I want to by this is to know that number two was the bad one. If that's the case, I think I'm satisfied with the results. But I'm pretty confident in what I have. One, two, three, and four. Wes Reynolds, kind enough to join us for a second segment. Again, you can follow him at Wes Reynolds 1. That's the number one. Wes, have you looked ahead to college football week 2 yet?
I have. I played a few plays yesterday as the numbers were coming out. And, you know, the week 2 is always the week where we, you know, we've now seen everybody. So it's kind of like, okay, you know, is it an overreaction or an underreaction to what we saw in week 1? And, you know, I mentioned earlier that when that went to 6.5, I did take a little Michigan just on principle. It's sure to look stupid now that you have Kyle Whittingham saying today, well, Bryce Underwood's our quarterback, like basically paraphrasing what he said right now. So it's like, okay, there's a possibility you might have a $10 million a year backup.
That's
like,
right.
Okay. But, you know, I will say one thing in watching that game. It's like the evaluation now, and that's why you're seeing all of these teams with a select few like Ohio State with Julian saying, you know, you almost don't develop your quarterbacks anymore. You let them go somewhere else and develop, and then you just buy them if you're one of the bigger programs. Mm-hmm. And then you just get a portal quarterback because you never know, you know, if you miss on that evaluation on a kid out of high school. And you give that kid a bunch of money and he's got a lot of hype and he's a 5-star recruit and all that, kind of like Underwood at Michigan. Then you're kind of thinking, well, what do we have right now? Like, he really hasn't developed. He really hasn't improved all that much. So, you know, that's why these guys, you know, they go work portal now, I think, for the quarterbacks by and large.
They work portal now. And then my brain goes to a completely different subject, which is the whole LSU and, you know, Lane Kiffin and these guys coming back from the pros. Will they, you know, what's the final ruling going to be on that? Will they allow in these 5 for 5, will they allow players from the class of 2022 or that entered in 2022 participate in that? It's all non-amateurism, right? Let's not act like it's something mm-hmm. else, and let's not act outraged by that either. So it's all in the same bucket. Let us just acknowledge what we are watching is true free agency and nothing amateurism about it. So let's sort
but
of
one thing I will
it.
Say that's why I think it's like rich when I'm sure if you're watching the coverage and the games over the weekend, you saw Nick Saban and the Save College Sports Act ads. It's like these guys, though, that had the advantage all these years are so ticked off that you get teams like Indiana now that can figure it out. You know, that's like, hey, you know, we can get this structure and this NIL and revenue sharing set up and, you know, do it within the rules and you know, all their advantage is mad. So all these SEC guys, they are so ticked off about this that everybody else can play that game now.
I freaking love it. I love it. Kelly's very, very, Kelly is, by the way, if you've noticed that Kelly Biddle is silent, he is pondering the water.
I got so thrown by number four. I am completely redoing my whole order right now, man.
Oh, you're not allowed to do that.
Now this is messing with my head, though, because I'm 1 and 3. No matter what gets revealed here today, this morning, number one and number three were clearly the two best tasting.
Yeah.
That's the conclusion I've come to.
And those were either the Aquapano or the Evian.
So that's why I'm throwing out Aquapano. I think it's Evian or Fiji's 1 and 3. Sorry. You continue.
He's going through the alkaline in his mind right now.
That's right, Wes.
To see what it is.
Well, then there's other things getting in my head, right? Of like, you know how often I drink the generic casino water? Like, maybe that tastes more normal to me. I don't know.
All right, Wes. We're done with college football. Want to go to week 1 of the NFL? What did, or unless you have others in college football, did you have anything else in college football for us?
A couple others I'll just mention really quickly. I did play North Texas at home against UNLV, and that's on the move. I think there's still some five out there. Not deceiving me looking at it, there were some six. North Texas, by the way, is who played my alma mater, Indiana, and they actually outyarded Indiana and had the ball for like 37 minutes of the game. Taven Jackson, the former Hoosier quarterback, is now the starter there at North Texas. This is just a tough deal for UNLV, right? They have all these G6, you know, playoff hopes. They get beat at home at Memphis. They go to Hawaii and do get a win late Saturday night in a very windy conditions, very low scoring game, by the way. And now they got to go all the way to Dallas area, to Denton County, and play North Texas. Like, this is tough travel in a week. You know, you go all the way back out to Hawaii and then you come home, then you got to go back on the road. So North Texas taking the points at home against UNLV for me.
Okay. Let's go to, in the interest of time, let's go to week one in the National Football League. It is upon us, a little more than 48 hours away from the Super Bowl rematch between the Seahawks and the Patriots, though this one in Seattle, or at Seattle, I should say. What have you bet so far? What are you thinking about betting? What have you done so far? Let's start there.
Couple totals I played. I played the over in the Ravens Colts game. The defense, I'm a little worried about that secondary, and the Colts, really the pass rush hasn't been there. And plus, this is a new deal with the new man taking over for the Ravens, of course, Minter. And I think that this is going to be probably a high scoring game. Daniel Jones did not play in the preseason, but he should be good to go for week number one. I did bet the over in the Ravens Colts here, and also the under in the Packers Vikings. But in terms of sides, I know we've had like months to work to look at these, but it almost seems, you know, you don't want to get into like analysis or paralysis by analysis, I should say, with these, you know, where it's like we start overthinking them now. Because it's like you want to get off to a good start, right? Mm-hmm. And these things have been up since April and May. And it's like, am I missing something here? What am I not doing? So you get worried about it. So it's like, I think you got to just stick with your convictions. Like one of the things my convictions are telling me is that game in Australia, whole world's going to bet the Rams. No question about it, based on what they have. And the 49ers have had awful news this summer, you know, of course, let alone their owner getting busted for doing something there in the state of Ohio, but and the Kyle Shanahan car accident as well. But I think that number's going up, so I think you can wait on it. I'm going to take the 49ers here against the Rams. Shanahan has gotten the better of this matchup by and large, as you well know, Gil, over the last several seasons.
Yeah, it's what is it? A lifetime? It's 11-7, by the way. Lifetime 11-7 straight up, mm-hmm. anyway, between Shanahan and McVay. The Rams did win in the McVay Shanahan matchup, the only postseason game. But yeah, 11-7 lifetime term in favor of Shanahan. You and I are completely aligned on everything you've said. One, the only two games I really have any conviction on are Seattle laying the points Wednesday, the Niners taking the points in Melbourne Thursday night, our time. Much of the sort of narrative that you're talking about, I believe in too. Everything about the Niners, we could be overcooking their injuries. We could be overcooking just how good the Rams are right out of the gate. And so, and with the travel that sort of neutralizes all of that, right, which has historically favored teams that have come early. I love the Niners plus the points. But Sunday, Wes, I'm with you on the sides. I look at all of them. I got to come up with a third for the Megapod. I got to come up with a third, fourth, and fifth for Millions. I'm looking at those right, like glary-eyed. I'm like, glazed eyes. I'm like, I don't know. I really don't know. Not a lot of conviction.
This is just one of those weeks, man, where it's like, go 3-2.
Yes.
And 3-2 weeks don't win you these contests. But go 3-2 in week one, and you're at least like, okay, I didn't go like the over. I didn't go right. The donut over 5. So go 3-2 and be happy with it.
Wes, sorry to subject you to the water taste test, but that's how the cookie crumbled today. I appreciate your time, man. Thank you.
No, I enjoyed it. You guys are working there on Labor Day. Put the Norma Rae union sign
that's
up.
That's right.
To protest these hostile conditions.
What do you know about Norma Rae, Kelly?
Not a mucho.
Sally Field. Thank you, Wes. Appreciate it. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, cozied up, by the way, because we have a third member on the desk right now. He is the producer of Money Moves, which comes to you 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, Monday through Friday here on the network, hosted by the great Story Bonatoni and Jonathan Von Tobel. Their producer, Justin Emery, wrote a phenomenal article at VSiN.com last week, which I talked about last week, about his journey from betting daily strikeout totals on individual pitchers, over-unders on individual pitchers. This pitcher, pitcher X, has 6.5, over-under, 5.5. How he wasn't doing too much with that, wasn't really making a lot of headway. And then he had a shift in his sort of evolution into this kind of betting strategy and really ended up trying to really, you know, get the best of the strikeout leader per day, which is where he found his pot of gold. Justin Emery joins us right now on the desk here on a numbers game. Little golf clap golf for clap. You. Justin, I couldn't have been more impressed. By the way, I botched that little that intro there. I couldn't have been more impressed with how you thought your way through this. First of all, when you first were doing strikeout props, and thanks for coming. Let me just say that.
Yes, early.
What is no your problem. Twitter handle, by the way?
At Justin Emery Show.
Justin Emery Show.
First name, last name, show.
E-M-E-R-Y, by the way, for those who are scoring at home. All right, so before you did the strikeout props just for the individual pitchers, were you betting a lot before then?
I'm outside of baseball, not really. Okay. As far as baseball goes, I'm strictly a props guy, pretty much. I don't like to put my wagers in the hands of a bullpen a lot of times. So I'm strictly a props guy. I like to go after player props, Nerfy, Yerfy, that kind of stuff. I do not really like to go full game, even first five innings. I'm not really a big fan of. Just put it in the player props hands.
And you are baseball first, right? Baseball first, football second, and that's mainly you, right?
As far as betting goes. Now, yeah. Football okay. is my favorite sport. But when it comes to betting, it's baseball and it's not even close. Like I sit in the back all during the NFL playoffs. Like, all right, guys, I can't wait for it to be baseball season just for me to be like, I don't wish football season to go away, but I love like the 6-7 month stretch of every single day being able to bet on baseball.
And then what was the light bulb for you? You just sort of stumbled on a prop that you didn't know existed.
Yeah. I just was scrolling through the Caesars app, trying to find some content to put on the show. And it popped up daily strikeout leader, daily K's. And I clicked on it. And the first pitcher was like plus 600, plus 700. I go, all right, well, that's much better than like minus 124 for whoever it is to go over 6.5. So I just fired a couple the very first day. Didn't win. Didn't do any research. Hey, let me just fire a couple off. Didn't win. The next day, June 2nd, because I found it on June 1st. This happened to be the first of the month. June 2nd, I hop on there. I say, all right, let me throw some on Kyle Harrison. I know he's really hot right now. Strikes out 12 plus 600. And rest is history. It just kept going.
You were hooked. But now you did this. This is not just him throwing darts, though. You were very deliberate. You had already done the research for the individual props. What you had already been doing just happened to apply better to this then, right? It was some of the same stuff you were doing.
So in addition to doing the over-under, I would say, okay, let me see who can hit the top of their ladder. You know, if it's 5.5, who can get 6+, 7+, 8+? But, you know, if you can get 8+ at just, for example, plus 700, but to lead the slate, the same guy might be 16-1. And the difference between leading the slate is getting 10 and just 8+. Why not just roll the dice at the highest odds you can possibly get for that guy?
The article's still up at VSiN.com. It was called...
Can he get to 10?
Can he get to 10? Because 10, you did the legwork on this. 10 ended up being the number that really was the, for lack of a better term, the strike price on these. That was what you were trying to get to with all of these, because more often than not, that ended up winning the day.
Yes. So I didn't start tracking the odds till June, but I retroactively went back from opening day. So for the 6 days in March, the average leading strikeout was 10.33. For April, it was 9.83. For May, it was 10.23. For June, it was 10.1. For July, it was 10.44.
Wow, pretty consistent.
For August, it is 10.1. And so far through... the first 6 days of September, we only have one that is under 10.
Only one that is under 10. And by the way, the other thing you mentioned in the article, which I thought was fascinating, was you then did a study. And by the way, here are the first 6 days. Those numbers on the left are just the first 6 days of September. These are who have come home in this strikeout prop, the daily strikeout prop. You see, as long as Trevor Rogers on September 2nd, 22-1 for the Birds, he had 11 Ks. And then as short as Gavin Williams on the 1st of September, but he was 8-1 and he had 13 Ks. He ended up having the most on that day. So, and so far the most of any winner in this month so far. The other thing you did, and we'll come to today, all this is leading to who Justin has for today. No pressure, Justin, on today, by the way.
No problem. But
you also did an interesting analysis of where the winners in the betting odds list, where the winners generally came from. Were they the short shots? Were they the long shots? What did you find?
So more often than not, the shortest shot on the board did not win. If the favorite won, he was usually significantly shorter. So the average odds for the shortest on the board was about plus 430. Okay. However, the outright winner only won about 15% of the time, if it was the shortest odds. However, caveat to that is if the shortest odds did win outright, he was usually closer to plus 380. So if you had a guy on the shortest odds that was, you know, plus 250, plus 275, sometimes as low as plus 175, might be a little bit of an indication you might want to get on that guy.
How many times have you won this so far? Out of how many roughly days?
So I have the, so I'm 4-2 in September so far.
Are you betting how many guys a day are you betting?
Anywhere from like 2 to 4. More than 4. Like yesterday I had 3.
Okay.
On Saturday, I had 4. On Friday, I had 4. Anywhere from 2 to 4.
Okay. And how many times have you won doing that?
So,
4 out of 6 days.
Yeah. September, I'm 2-4. I am 61-25 from June 1st through August.
61-25?
Yes.
What do you mean 61-25?
So, 61 of those days, yeah. I had the winner. 25 of my bets, I had one of my bets was the winning pitcher, 61 of those days. 25 of those days, I went 0-4, whatever.
Since what? Gotcha. Since when? Since 80-some days
since,
back?
Since yeah. June. Since
wow,
June 1st.
Since June. Okay, 61-25 doing it this way.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
And 4-2 in September.
All right, and never more than 3 or 4 at a time.
In the beginning, I did because I was still kind of developing my strategy. It was really up until mid to late June that sometimes I was firing on as many as like 8 or 9 guys, depending on who I thought it was. Because earlier in the season, the pool of winners was much larger. Mm. And then as we go through, you realize, all right, this guy doesn't have it anymore. Yeah. This guy doesn't have it anymore. This guy doesn't have it. You could alter your strategy. But it really until about mid to late June, that's when I said, okay, I can't just fire at half the board. Even if because the problem, it wasn't that I was not picking winners. I was diluting how much profit
sure.
I was making.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like if I was hitting, you know, a 14-1,
it's not really
but I was only winning like 1.5 units and it just wasn't worth it at those price, hit those prices. I have so many guys. Yeah. And I realized it was just, I'm putting guys on just because I don't want to miss out on it.
And the math is not 62-25 clean because the days you're losing the 25, you're losing in chunks.
Mm. Yes.
But the odds on the 62 that you end up winning overcomes all of
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Which brings us to today. Dylan Cease, no surprise, the short shot for the Blue Jays. He's 4-1. Jesus Luzardo is plus 425. And then the only other three in single digits, Emmett Sheehan, 7-1. Joey Cantillo, 8-1. And Yuri Perez is 9-1. So what are we doing today?
Love Dylan Cease. I also have a lot of Dylan Cease for season strikeout leader. So big on him. Anytime you get Cease plus 300 or more, I'm going to take him. So you're getting him at 4-1. Jump all over him. Love Luzardo. He's won many times this summer for me. I'm trying to talk myself into Perez at 9-1. They're the only three that I really can think are capable of winning for today. Chase Burns, no. He's kind of fallen off a little bit for his strikeout metrics. Yeah, he's. And here are some of the projections for today. These are from VSiN.com. Opta AI and Ballpark both have Cease and Luzardo in the top three, and Cease is number one. no surprise. He's plus 400. I would just take your two shots today. Cease Lizardo. You want a little piece of Perez, maybe like a half unit, quarter unit, but you only got 11 games today. That's also shorting the odds a little bit. If you had a full 15 game slate, you'd probably get a little bit longer.
And all these, and the metrics you use to come up with your projections are all in that article.
Yes.
Which is called, once again,
Can You Get to 10?
Can You Get to 10 at vsin.com. Justin Emery, thank you for joining us, man. I cannot praise you enough for that piece. It was so well written.
Yes.
At Justin Emery Show is where you can find him on Twitter. And there it is. There's the tweet. Kyle Harrison started it all.